Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmuck, Lance Mehta with you, and the phone number is 201-939-4513 or on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. The Giants coming off a disappointing 30-10 loss to the Dallas Cowboys, but to me, Lance, the score not really indicative of how close the game was. It was 10-10 heading into the fourth quarter, and then it kind of got blown open because of a couple of big plays by the Cowboys and eventually a couple of turnovers by the Giants offense.
Yeah, they outscored the Giants 20-0 in the fourth quarter. So as you mentioned, it was a highly contested affair for the first three quarters and then the big explosive plays. But John, we've been talking about this all season long. You go back to the Rams game, the 49ers game, the Seahawks game is another one where, you know, the games were competitive in the early stages, and then what was the ultimate difference maker? It was these big plays, these explosive plays, and in the blink of an eye, you had the Cole Beasley short catch and run for 54 yards. That sets up Jason Witten's 20-yard touchdown, and then once the Giants are forced to punt, Cowboys get the ball back again. They're deep in their own territory, and they make up for that because a short pass to Rod Smith turns into an 81-yard touchdown, and then he ultimately runs in for another touchdown. So, you know, that's how things get out of hand in the fourth quarter, and this is what has plagued the Giants' defense throughout this season, where you think the game is on the path of coming down to the wire, and then little breakdowns here or there all of a sudden lead to huge big plays on the opposite end.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it was one of those situations, Lance, where offensively the Giants stayed on schedule for the most part in the first three quarters. They were getting into third and reasonable, third and manageable. I know Eli Manning's final stat line probably doesn't look good to people. He finished 31 of 46 with one touchdown and two interceptions, and he threw for just over 200 yards and 46 attempts, 228. Those numbers, obviously, ones you want to be better. But if you look a little bit deeper into the numbers here, Lance, I think he played a lot better than those numbers would indicate. In the first half, he was 14 of 18 for 117 yards and a touchdown. It's an excellent first half of play. And then you go to the second half, they had three drops that would have went for first downs in critical situations. You can argue four if you count that last Roger Lewis one towards the end of the game. That really could have extended some drives and given the Giants an opportunity to make some plays. There were balls that Eli Manning put right on his receivers. It was a rollout and a pass towards the sideline to Roger Lewis that he dropped, a slant pattern that would have went for a first down to Sterling Shepard that he dropped, and then a key third and four on a pass to Evan Engram that hit him in the hand that he should have caught but did not. And this team is not designed, Lance, to be able to overcome even smaller mistakes like that and have success on offense and win football games.
Well, and the two plays that you're referring to with Shepard and Lewis, those were on third and twos. Mm-hmm. So even more manageable situations where you're saying, hey, you know, you pick up that first down, maybe you get to put together a lengthier drive, and that could lead to at least a field goal opportunity. And you're right. When they shoot themselves in the foot, this team doesn't all of a sudden put that behind them and say, hey, you know, we're going to bounce back because we know that we could put together a lengthy drive. That's just not happening. Have they been able to put together some drives that go 15 to 16 plays? Yes, they had one early against the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. It stalled in the red zone. They got a field goal. But, John, those are far and few, let's face it, throughout this season. Maybe you get one or two a game if you're fortunate. If you were able to get five or six a game, you'd be like, all right, we can overcome a key drop on third and two. The team is just not built that way, and you know when Odell Beckham's not on the field, he would have the ability to help you out because he could turn a two-yard pass into a 40-yard gain or something like that.
And look, if you're Sterling Shepard and Evan Engram, and I'm sure they'll tell you this, and Evan Engram was frustrated with himself after the play, they're the Giants' big playmakers that are left. Engram was a first-round pick. Shepard was a second-round pick. Everyone else is hurt now. I mean, you're on to your fifth and sixth wide receivers. Darius Powell was brought up on the practice squad last week and thrown in there as a starting wide receiver. And then, of course, the poor kid breaks his foot.
The injury bug yet again.
Absolutely. But these are the guys that have to make plays. I mean, if you're Sterling Shepard and you're Evan Engram and you have a chance to make plays for first downs, you have to make them. You know, your quarterback is relying on you to make those sorts of plays, and in their cases, you know, pretty basic plays. It's not even really go above the X's and O's and make a crazy play. It's make a play that you should make or anyone that's in that position should make. And They have to make those type of plays if this offense has any chance of putting up more than the 10 points they had against the Cowboys.
Yeah, if your playmakers are not getting it done, then you can't expect the guy from the practice squad to all of a sudden bail you out. And
right.
Shepard had the ball, if you go back to that play, John, and then as he turns, it just loses grasp of the football, and they're fortunate that it didn't go down as a fumble because that was close to the border of did he make a football move and turn as he was trying to go up the field. It did not, though, when you look at the replay, but he had it and then just could not complete the process of the catch. Now, listen, I'm not trying to make excuses for these guys. I agree with you, John. They have to make the plays. But what I think gets lost when we throw out those statements is let's not make it sound like these guys are going out there and just going through the motions and they don't care. Because I feel as if, sometimes fans,
they look
at that and like, oh, here we go again. Evan Engram, another drop. You know, they're going out there. They want to make the plays. It's just the mental mistakes are piling up. I don't think players go into a game thinking, all right, how many can I drop over the course of four quarters? That's not necessarily the case. And I don't necessarily think that this team is distracted given all that has happened. It's just not concentrating and not securing the football before you think about what your next move is going to be. And I think that's exactly what transpired with the Sterling Shepard play.
Yeah, and look, they're trying. It's not a lack of effort. But frankly, this is a problem that has plagued this team since the start of the year is drops. I believe ESPN Stats and Information puts out this, or is it NFL Matchup on ESPN puts out this graphic every week, percentage of passes dropped that are thrown, and the Giants are at the top of the list every single week. Even Odell Beckham Jr.
Well, I was going to say that. I'm glad you brought that
drops
up.
Drops issues in the first 4 weeks.
Issues.
And we know Brandon Marshall has always had drops issues on concentration balls and things like that. So, look, Eli Manning hasn't been perfect this year. He's had his issues. He overthrew Evan Engram on a seam route that should have been a big play in the game. But honestly, that was his one really bad throw of the game. There really weren't any other ones. The last two at the end of the game, and I think this speaks to the way Eli Manning plays, he knew that they're down 14 points with 4 minutes to play. I need to now become more aggressive and go out there and make some plays. And he put the ball in danger because he knew that you have to be more aggressive in those situations. That's when the interceptions came. And frankly, that's why Eli's thrown so many interceptions over the course of his career, because he knows when he has to try to be aggressive, he'll go be aggressive even if it means throwing an interception, which I think in those types of situations, what you want from your quarterback. You don't want them to, you know, worry about their quarterback rating, worry about their numbers, and not try to force something in those types of situations. But I thought Eli Manning played a good game. I thought he didn't get a lot of help. And the other issue you had too, Lance, besides the drop passes, is that whenever they tried to do a 5 or 7 step drop, spare one or two plays, DeMarcus Lawrence was in the backfield. He was, and he didn't register a sack.
But he was active.
This is why sack numbers, you can't judge players on how well they play based on sack numbers. He was all over the backfield. You know, I believe Pro Football Focus had him for one quarterback hit in 5 hurries. It seemed like worse than that to me, because the Giants were running a lot of, you know, 2-3 step drops, get the ball out really quick, and he was still getting close to Eli Manning on those plays. So that's the problem the Giants have. I mean, they ran the ball okay in this game. It wasn't great. 29 for 102. At least they got the number of carries up there to a decent amount. That's 3.5 yards per carry. You take away the Shepard from -9 on the end around, it's closer
to,
you know,
the Cowboys read beautifully.
It's closer to around 3.7 or 3.8, which is a better number in terms of yards per carry. They ran the ball okay, but they ran the ball well enough to get the quarterback in a position to be in tenable situations. Because we know, Lance, this team cannot convert third and longs. They're just not going to be able to do it with the talent that they have in general. Now, you'll get one here or there, sure,
but
you're not going to do it consistently. And it's the same deal. Injuries, protection, run game, receivers dropping passes, you know, the quarterback, it all goes hand in hand in a team effort.
It's the talent around the quarterback. It's not just the quarterback. So you have to take that into consideration. And they were 6 of 16 on third down, to your point, John. There were a number of manageable third downs. And we were talking about when the drops occurred, it wasn't as if they were facing 3rd and 17, 3rd and 2s, and 3rd and 4s. So it just goes back to show you, when you're even in the manageable third downs and you put yourself in a favorable position, they still can't find a way to work out of their issues because they can't capitalize on those favorable situations. And I would argue that it goes even beyond that, John. It's not just the third down situation. How about just when you're given favorable field position, walk away with points? And the perfect example is Dan Bailey, who's one of the most accurate kickers in the National Football League, gave the Giants 2 significant gifts in this game.
Don't we throw two other gifts in there too, by the way? How about the Dez Bryant drop pass that hit him in the face? That would have been for a touchdown in the first half.
Correct.
And the Wayne Gallman play where they called his forward progress stopped on a fumble when it clearly wasn't. He was still falling forward for a first down. Yeah. So those are two other breaks that they got in the first half.
No, that's fair. Dez Bryant was the one down the left sideline where he clearly beat his corner. I forget who was on. I don't know if it was Dixon on him again
on
that one.
Dixon,
but he certainly had a step on him and went right off his face. But what I was referring to was situations that did play out where the Giants did ultimately get the football back. Dan Bailey misses two 50-plus yard field goals.
I see where you're going.
So
yep.
What I was going to point out is
good point.
The Giants are taking over, John, at their own 40 and their own 43 in both of those circumstances. So all you're asking your offense to do is you're not even asking them to get in the red zone. You're just saying give Aldrick Rosas an opportunity for a field goal,
can
right?
Can you gain 20 to 25 yards?
I don't think that's asking for too much, and the team was forced to punt in both of those circumstances.
Well, here you go, and I'll give you the series here, Lance. They took over on Bailey's 53-yard miss with 9:41 to go in the second quarter, first and 10 on their own 43-yard line. Now, the Giants got down to the Dallas 37 and had a fourth and three. You could argue that maybe you should go for it there and not punt for it. But Browning ended up having a poor punt, and it was a touchback, so he only gained 17 yards of field position. If you want to argue you should have went for it there, I get that argument. And I'm looking for the – was the second Dan Bailey miss in
the
second half?
Second quarter. I mean, the second half, correct. It was the third quarter, I think, midway through the third.
There it is.
Memory serves.
Bailey missed a 50-yard field goal. The Giants took over on their own 40, and the Giants had a run for three, a pass for five, and then I believe that was the Shepherd drop on third and two.
Three
and
out.
On the slant. Mm-hmm.
So there you go. So it was costly in terms of that was favorable field position, and then you didn't convert on a manageable third down. So it was basically killing you from both ends.
And now we'll talk about the defense for a second. We've talked a lot about the offense. Understandably, the team only scored 10 points. So you're going to focus on the offense first. And, you know, at first glance, when I think about this game, I think, you know what, the defense actually did a pretty good job. They held the Cowboy running game in check. They only gained, you know, under 4 yards per carry. You know, you didn't have many big plays in the running game. The longest run was 15 yards. You know, they weren't getting tackles for loss a whole lot, but they were holding, you know, 2-3 yards on a lot of these runs. But then you look up and you say, holy Toledo, the Cowboys had 455 yards of total offense.
Well, that's what big plays will do.
that's what big plays will do. And if you look at those big plays for these individual players, you know, it goes on and on.
Well,
81 yards for Rod Smith, 50 for Dez, 54 for Beasley, and then Wynn had the 20-yard touchdown. And like I mentioned earlier, Dez would have had another 30-plus-yard touchdown catch if he caught the ball that hit him in the face. So those big plays on their own add up.
Well, that's
to
200
yards to 200 yards of offense for Dallas,
right there,
which
about,
is almost half their production. So, you know, those big plays will kill you, and a lack of big plays on offense. The Giants had only one play of 20 yards or more over the course of the game. The play where Eli Manning made a nice audible, and they completed that little flag route to Evan Engram off the Cowboys' blitz when Eli stood in there and got hammered but still completed the pass.
35-yard gain.
You're not going to win games when you have that differential in terms of big plays.
Well, and that's also why they can't capitalize on favorable field position, because if it's a struggle to gain 20 yards, John, and you're not getting big explosive plays, you got to do it piecemeal. You have to do it with the running game. You have to do it with 3 to 4 yard gains, and what's happening is they'll get two of them, and then all of a sudden the drive will stall because of a drop pass or a miscue and so forth. So, you know, you've got a defense that's struggling to prevent the big plays. You've got an offense that's struggling to move the football. Shouldn't surprise anybody. It's hard to win football games under both of those circumstances. And then on top of that, you know, you mentioned Brad Wing having a rough performance in terms of punting. If your special teams doesn't help your cause either, you know, that's just going to be thrown onto the laundry list of problems. And I think they all came to the forefront in yesterday's game. But, I mean, if we're going to be fair here, we've been talking about a number of these issues all season long. To say that this was the first time that we've been talking about that would be extremely misleading.
Lance, what's been amazing to me is that, and this will be my final point before we get to your calls, and Lance, you can make whatever final point you want to make. In years past, from game to game, we've seen different things go wrong. Like one game, it's, you know, a fumble or an interception. The next game, the defense didn't get a stop. The next game, the offense couldn't protect Eli. And you'll have some different issues week to week sometimes. This year, all of these games are the same. Every single one, the Giants don't run the ball quite well enough. They've been better, but they're still not great.
Slowed down in recent weeks.
It has, the last 2 or 3 weeks, absolutely.
There was a surge initially.
They don't get big plays on offense. They give up big plays on defense. The defense doesn't force any turnovers, which is another issue. The Cowboys had zero turnovers in this game, and we talked about it last week. The Giants were going to have to be at least plus one in this game if they wanted to win, and plus two more likely
than
not. Well, because
plus one's not even a guarantee.
And they ended up being a minus two in the game. So it's the same thing every week. And at some point, I think you just got to say, you know what? With all these injuries, these guys just aren't good enough right now, but they're trying. But look, you had a guy you picked up the street 2 weeks ago going one-on-one with Dez Bryant. And we talked about in the show last week that this could be Dez's first 100-yard game. If he didn't drop that deep pass, it would have been. But, I mean, Calvin Munson, you just start middle linebacker. You know, people are like, oh, you could develop him in the practice squad this year. And he's your starting middle linebacker as B.J. Goodson's got the bad ankle. So it's just really, really difficult. It's really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, the talent pool is depleted at this point, given all the injuries. And as you mentioned, the players that were expected to be developmental options are now being thrown into starting roles. And also, a lot of these players were not with the team during course of training camp. So they're learning along the way. And, oh, by the way, going up against Pro Bowl-esque talent.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, and I know they're banged up, and Olivier Vernon and JPP are playing through injuries. You saw Jason Pierre-Paul at the club. He's been dealing with the shoulder for a lot of the year. Vernon has had the ankle for a lot of the season. In fact, you saw him kind of get up and limp off the field, or actually limp but stay on the field after one of the plays in the game on Sunday. But you got to get more consistent pressure on Dak Prescott. He was just sitting back there and doing whatever he wanted.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, the Cowboys do have a very strong offensive line. Not that that's a legitimate excuse. I mean, you should still be able to find ways to get to the quarterback, but his elusiveness, his ability to run out of the pocket made it even more challenging. And listen, this is another issue that we've talked about, John. Ideally, you'd love to go into every game, hit the quarterback, rough him up, get him uncomfortable. But, you know, you take the Redskins game out of the equation when they had six sacks against Kirk Cousins, and a number of them were covered sacks, so I think that is speaking volumes of how well the secondary played in that game. It's been a struggle. I mean, they've only had about three or four sacks in the group of five or six games surrounding that Redskins contest. So, I mean, that has been an issue as well. This is the team, and, you know, you referred to this in terms of the takeaways. You need that game-changing X-factor type of play every single Sunday. And if you don't get that, what you are doing is you are asking your offense to come through with those explosive plays, which is very difficult for them to do. I mean, think about this, John. The two games they won, they beat Denver and they beat Kansas City. Both of them, as I noted on our Radio Network postgame show, was when they won turnover differential. So that's one common thread. But here's the other thing. Janoris Jenkins scores a pick six against Denver. Your defense puts 6 points, 7 points if you want to take it further with the special teams kick on the board. So your defense helped you because not only did they take the ball away, they actually put points on the board. And then in the Chiefs game, the defense didn't score, but if you remember, the return by Landon Collins put them, what, on like the 5-yard line, and then ultimately they were able to punch it in. So not only do they have to take away the football, they have to find other ways to score through their defense and through their special teams. That's putting an awful lot of pressure on this roster.
Yeah, I think in that Chiefs game, I think only 6 points were scored that didn't come off of turnovers. That actually required the offense.
Yeah, because Kansas City was turning it over like crazy, and the Giants too.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of the same deal, folks, but let's take your calls and we'll talk about it at 201-939-4513. Matt in Rhode Island will lead us off. Hi, Matt. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Doing, Matt?
I think you guys pretty much hit the nail on the head with the game yesterday. It's almost at the point where analyzing the team isn't even almost worth it in many senses. Some of the guys almost have no chance on offense to you know, play up to their skill level based on what's going on around them. But my call was really more about, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, what was really concerning to me is what the hell is going on with Eli Apple? He's tweeting during the game yesterday. He retweeted something about one of the guy Smith's 80-yard touchdown.
Yeah, we saw it.
It's like, does this guy not have a clue? He's inactive. He's a healthy scratch, according to him. He's saying he's too healthy. And then, so he's basically been a healthy scratch for 5 or 6 weeks, and he's live tweeting the game like he's a fan. There's no one in that locker room that can, some, you know, shake this kid up, and say, he's on the verge of blowing it. You know, it's almost like there's something going on with him mentally.
Well, Matt, I imagine those conversations are going to happen this week if they haven't happened already. You would think the players, his teammates, and the coaches would both have a conversation with him about that. Obviously, you know, retweeting a Go Buckeyes tweet for a guy that just scored an 80-yard touchdown against your own team is one of the dumber things you'll ever see. Look, he's going to have to figure it out. It's on Eli Apple. He's going to have to figure things out and figure it out. Otherwise,
do you guys know how old Eli is?
I believe Eli Apple is 22, if I'm not mistaken, right?
So, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and play the revisionist history. When I was 22, I was doing a lot dumber stuff than that. But, you know, I was in college with no responsibility, I mean, really at the time. And it's just concerning that it almost seems like he's becoming defiant now, you know, about it. He's just like, hey, like, screw them. And it's really sad to see for a guy that had such a promising rookie season that this is what it's come down to, that he's been a healthy scratch, you know, and tweeting for the opposing team scoring a touchdown.
Well, listen, you know, it goes back to maturity. You know, at this level, you have to be able to deal with adversity. And, you know, I brought this up also when we were talking in the postgame show on the radio, and I'm not saying this is an excuse, but, you know, you brought up his age, Matt. Let's face it, Eli Apple came from one of the most accomplished collegiate programs in the history of football. They very rarely had losing seasons. They very rarely faced adversity. They very rarely put their starters in a position where they had to be benched or they were on the sideline because they struggled. And now all of a sudden, your first year here as a professional goes pretty well. The team wins. Okay, it's a continuation. Now all of a sudden, the second season, the record reverses. Now you're personally faced with adversity. I mean, I don't know Eli Apple's entire life story, but I would say that this is probably the first time in his football career that he has been faced with a situation where he's not on top of the world. He's being criticized, both as a teammate as well as an individual. How do you react to that? Well, now we're starting to see it.
And again, this is not an excuse either, but he's also dealing with the personal stuff, too,
with
his mother having
absolutely
brain surgery and, you know, things of that nature. So who knows how that's affecting him. But again, the bottom line, Matt, is that, you know, he's going to have to mature. He's going to have to figure that sort of stuff out. And then whatever the new regime is for the Giants, they will make a determination on what they'll do with him next year.
I think that's actually a great point about, you know, where he's coming from in college and then continuing into last year. And then even he's probably looks up to guys like Jenkins and DRC in the locker room who've had their own issues this season as well. So
overall,
just not a good vibe in that locker room. I appreciate you guys taking my call.
No, Matt,
appreciate
no problem.
The call, Matt.
And look, I think if you're concerned about Eli Apple, I think that's a fair concern.
Now, the two healthy scratches were the two of the first four games he missed. The third game, he did show up on the injury report, just to give the timeline, with a hip and a back issue, and then that led to him being inactive. Now, this week,
he has said, though, even last week, that I thought I could play.
He did. So what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that it shouldn't be interpreted as a healthy scratch, but the third game of the four, he did get added to the injury report. That, I just wanted to throw that out just for the sake of facts.
And that's absolutely fair. That's absolutely fair, and there seems to be some clarity issues in terms of, you know, what's going on. The Giants said that he was banged up last week, so he couldn't get on the practice field,
not
get
enough
reps.
Yeah.
Therefore, they couldn't play him. Eli Apple says, well, I was healthy the whole week or whatever. So, I don't know. It's something that the Giants are going to have to figure out. And you're right. He's a valuable player. He has talent. There's no doubt about it. He showed that talent in his first year. And that's, again, I think that's going to be a high priority for the new regime, is trying to make sure he fits in here.
Well, and the other thing I'll add before we get back to the lines, I mean, we were talking about bringing in guys from the practice squad and off the street. Janoris Jenkins goes on IR, John. At the beginning of the year, if you're the Giants, you're like, well, if one of those top three guys gets hurt, we feel good that we can rotate between those three and at least fill the outside. Now, all of a sudden, DRC is the only guy left standing. So I think it puts the Giants secondary in a very precarious situation.
Yeah, I mean, Lance, they're starting corners last week. Brandon Dixon and Ross Cockrell. Is it Brandon Dixon? Did I get that right?
Yes,
it's
you
Brandon,
did get that right.
Thank you.
Yes.
And that,
check mark.
As Carl Banks says, it's the flip card kids. I mean, Darryl Morris is coming off the bench. Who?
Well, I mean, remember, John Mara at his presser said it's the first time in a long time he's actually had to sit at a game with his flip card. And listen, I'll admit, it's the first time in a long time I've had to sit
with
a flip card, because
absolutely,
I'm like, well, did this guy come for the practice squad? Was he signed as a free agent? I mean, there's been so many transactions. Ross Cockrell, I mean, he at least was an addition right before the season. Mm-hmm. He's also been a veteran. He's been with the Steelers. You should at least recognize him. But, yeah, a lot of these other guys that have been shuffled in and out, I mean, it's been a revolving door.
The flip card kids.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
Carl
it's an appropriate title.
Yesterday, I thought it was a great line, so I'm going to use that for the rest of the year. Thank you, Carl.
We'll adopt it.
Travis in Queens, he joins us next. Hi, Travis.
Hey, fellas, how you guys doing?
Doing well,
right, Travis.
Good, good. Just a quick question. I hear mention about Dave Gettleman being hired. If he is hired, what's the chances of him signing? What's the chances of him keeping Spag? And I'll take your question on your answer off here.
Thank you, Travis. I appreciate it. I have no idea how Dave Gettleman feels about Steve Spagnuolo. I have no idea if that report is even close to being correct or accurate. I would say that to call anyone a favorite this early in the process is probably getting ahead of yourself a little bit.
Considering the process just started.
Do you think they had anybody interviewing for the job last week?
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, it just started in terms of at least the talking
right.
and the thinking.
I mean, they probably just got a list of candidates together last week. And how can you declare anyone a favorite? Or let me put it this way. I guess it makes sense that you would think he's the favorite before you talk to anybody
else.
Because
he's
the only guy that you know.
Well, yeah, he has ties to
the
organization.
So I would not put a lot of stock into that report. Obviously, they have a lot of respect for Dave Gettleman here. He had his long career. He was here from the 90s as the personnel director up until 2012 when he had more of kind of a senior advisory role. 2011 was his final season as the pro personnel director here for the Giants. So, look, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how he feels about Steve Spagnuolo. Obviously, he would come from Carolina. Would he then try to take somebody out of that Carolina system? I know Steve Wilkes, the defensive coordinator, is somebody that's been mentioned for head coaching vacancies around the league. That's something a couple people were speculating about, but it's all speculation, folks. This is, you know, I don't think anybody knows right now because no one's even been interviewed yet. So slow your roll on that just a little bit,
I mean, listen, it's a valid question.
Sure,
that
it is. Absolutely.
Throughout, and the reason why it's a valid question is because it goes back to familiarity, John. Mm-hmm. Gettleman was here the first time Steve Spagnuolo was the defensive coordinator. So you would assume that there's some type of relationship. But to go out there and say that, you know, he thinks fondly of him more so than any other person or whatever it may be, I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. I think you brought up another interesting point about, you know, if you try to connect the dots with the Carolina Panthers ties. Remember, you know, a number of people that were there under Gettleman have since joined the Buffalo Bills. Sean McDermott, remember, was the defensive coordinator. He's now the head coach, and Brandon Bean is now the general manager of the Buffalo Bills, and he was right under Gettleman. So teams have already jumped in to the personnel groupings for the Carolina Panthers.
Did the Bills use Ernie Accorsi as a consultant on their hire?
I don't think they used Ernie Accorsi. If I am correct, and I don't think I have my notes
Casserly?
On me. I don't know. I'm not sure who they used. But I was just going to say that I know that Ernie was used with the Bears mm-hmm. for their general manager. So that team, I could tell you, they used him also for the Lions. He consulted on that. And he consulted with the Panthers initially. Because remember, correct. He was a big mm-hmm. reason why Gettleman got the job, obviously, because he served under Ernie Accorsi when Ernie was the general manager, excuse me, here for the Giants. So I don't think Buffalo was on that list off the top of my head.
Nothing's coming up on my quick Google search.
I think he's been involved in three or four teams, but I don't think the Bills search was one of them.
201-939-4513. I'll continue to search here. But you're right. I don't remember that necessarily either. Let's go to Billy in New Jersey. He's up next. Hi, Billy.
Hey, guys. How are you, Paul? I mean, John, Lance, how are you?
We're doing well, Billy. How are you?
What's happening with you?
I'm good. Hey, John, I got an apology for you, man.
What's that?
I called about 3 weeks ago, right? And I accidentally gave Paul your little girl. So I want to apologize for that.
I didn't even notice it. I appreciate it, though. Thanks, Billy.
Yeah, no, you did notice it because you're the one that made the comment about, no, that's my little girl.
I don't remember that.
I just want to apologize.
That's okay, Billy. No worries. It's okay.
Yeah. Hey, check this out. I have an observation and a couple of comments, right? I don't know if you guys find it coincidental that everyone is breaking or either straining their ankle. I personally think the field is too soft. That's one comment. All right. My observation is I thought the guys played really well, came up short. The linebackers, man, 46, I don't know who that is. I don't even know half of these guys now. And
football
and another,
kids.
I'm sorry?
No, you're right.
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
Okay, and my comment, I have a problem with Sean Lee running free. Is it against the rule for them to hit him every time on every play? Because he's been killing us for years. The man is a tackling machine.
Yeah, well, he's a pretty good damn linebacker.
Yeah,
I mean, no matter
he's just
who
really
comes
good,
up against.
Man.
You're talking about one of the top linebackers to me in the National Football League.
And it's funny, I was actually looking at the game tape, Billy, and on that reverse where they – or the end around, I should say, rather, where they gave it to Sterling Shepard – Sean Lee was already running away from the play action fake towards where the end of the round was going to go.
No.
About 3 yards before Shepard even was even with Eli Manning and started getting the pitch. So he was so far ahead of where the offense was on that play from tape study or just reading instincts, whatever the reason was, that Bobby Hart didn't have a chance to block him because Lee had determined what the Giants had done so far in advance. So, look, I get what you're saying. It's frustrating to see him run around and have 19 tackles, whatever the heck he had in the game. But he's just a damn good player.
Yeah. Hey, I got something else. All right. That DN, number 97, all right, for the Cowboys. Why can't we double and triple team this guy, man? Sean Lee and that kid, they wrecked the game. I mean, you got a game plan for these guys, man.
I think he's referring to DeMarcus Lawrence.
The number 97,
yeah,
the DN,
DeMarcus Lawrence,
the big tall guy. I think people should take notes from Bill Belichick. You take the best player from the other team out of the game, period. It's as simple as that.
Well, I don't think you can take a guy like Sean Lee out of the game because he's playing off the line of scrimmage. But, yeah, I mean, look. Could they have chipped a little bit more on that side where DeMarcus Lawrence was? Yes, but I will say this too. I think remember, DeMarcus Lawrence didn't get a sack. So the Giants, despite him being effective, they did make an adjustment in their offense to get rid of the ball quickly so he could not get to Eli Manning, get any sacks, force any turnovers. So I do think they did adjust their offense to account for him being on that side. And rather than, say, double-teaming or chipping him and taking seven-step drops, they decided to just try to get rid of the ball quickly.
Which has always been their MO,
right?
Regardless of the opposition.
So let me ask you this.
Sure.
So are you telling me, now I can see Sean Lee is very fast. He's a smart, he's a very astute linebacker. So are you telling me that he's too smart for the D coordinators? Are you telling me that?
You mean the offensive coordinator?
I'm sorry, the offensive coordinator. Are you telling me that?
Well, I think he's got tremendous instincts, and I think that deserves some credit. I mean, to say that he's smarter than the defensive coordinator, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in the meeting rooms, but I mean, to say that Sean Lee's not a good player and that they should be taking advantage of him, I think is a little misleading because most teams are having trouble with Sean Lee. Listen, if you look back at the stats here,
or
the
Luke
Cowboys,
Kuechly, same difference.
Correct, Luke Kuechly is in the same boat.
Ryan Shazier, same
with Carolina,
thing. Yeah.
Pittsburgh. The Cowboys are 6-1 now in games Sean Lee plays, and they're the complete opposite in games that he doesn't play this season. Does that not tell it all? Does not tell what type of an impact he has on the field. So that's not just a Giants offensive issue. Everybody that has played Sean Lee has had a problem. And the Giants have had problems with Sean Lee going back to even last season, even in games they won.
And, Billy, remember, you can't double-team a linebacker. You have to get through the defensive line just to get to the second level. So you can't tell your offensive lineman, go block Sean Lee. Then the defensive tackle is going to be running
gonna
free.
Have a field day.
He's going to murder your running
back.
You know,
what you're focusing on the second layer of the defense. So that means that when the initial guys win their assignments up front, the running backs, the fullbacks, you know, they're the ones that have to take care of business with Sean Lee if he starts to find the holes.
All right, so let me ask you this, and then I'll take your answer. Yeah. How does Bill Belichick game plan for him? So I tell you what, don't answer that right now. I want you, Lance, and Paul. I mean, I'm sorry. But damn, man, I don't know why. Hey,
well, they clearly look identical, easy to mix those two up. Yeah.
I want you guys to look at some tape. Next time I call, I want you guys to tell me how Bill Belichick game plan for Sean Lee when they play the Patriots.
I will try to find that.
All right. I mean, keep in mind, that's only a matchup that happens once every 4 years. So, you know, Bill Belichick doesn't have to worry too much about Sean Lee. And do appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for...
Hold on. Lance.
Yeah.
Lance. Hey, I want you to tell Charlie about getting a man his lobsters, okay?
Jeff Eagles. Yeah, absolutely.
We're on it.
Listen, every time Charlie calls, I'm going to bring
it
up
it.
Until he runs out of excuses, essentially. I mean, that's going to be his biggest problem. We're going to get to the end of the season.
Jeff Eagles did confirm for me last week that he has not requested the lobsters yet.
So we have to... You're saying get Jeff on this program to simply request that he wants the lobsters?
No, because Jeff needs to make sure he gets them when he can, because they're going to come alive.
Correct.
So Jeff's
yes, I know
to make
Charlie
sure he
made
can
that point.
Cook them right away.
Yeah.
So Jeff is basically going to let Charlie know when he wants them, so Charlie can overnight them and
so
send
the
them.
Grill could get ready, the boiling pot. I mean, this is what we got in our coordinator.
I hate to say it. I think this is on Feagles right now. I don't think it's on Charlie. Miss Feagles has not told Charlie to send them, and Charlie has said, no, I'm not going to send them.
Well, then we'll get on top of it then.
Yeah.
This week.
Now, trust me,
sure.
I'd love to blame Charlie, but I think Feagles has not made the request yet.
I'm not going in the direction of blaming Feagles so quickly.
What Feagles said on the air, because we had this conversation on the air 2 weeks ago, he wants to do it on one of the days where we had the three-man booth the week before Christmas. He wants you in the middle, and he wants you to hold up the crate of lobsters.
Oh, exactly.
He actually said this on the air.
Yes.
So hold up the crate of lobsters so the listeners can see the lobsters.
Oh, well, I mean, it'd be my honor.
I made the point you were
position.
So short it would block your whole face, the crate
of lobsters.
It probably
would, but, you know, we can work on the logistics.
You can get you some phone books?
Correct, exactly. Phone books have been very valuable in my life. I can speak from experience going all the way back
crates,
to elementary school.
Sandbags.
Listen, I've had experience with everything. People have experimented on me, okay, with all of those different types of things.
Mentally,
yes.
too, right?
Yes, well, mentally, that's a whole other thing. I don't think we have enough time in the program to discuss the mental side of things.
Lance, many lobotomies meadow. Let's
I will tell you one quick story. In middle school, I don't even know why I'm revealing this, but you opened up Pandora's box.
Bring
I'm going to do it. Because all I'm going to do is I'm now going to bring myself being the brunt of jokes.
Yeah,
but
great.
We had legal court class, mock court, I guess is what
it
was
of course,
called, whatever it was.
I've had mock court, sure.
So I was the judge.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I was the judge. So it's funny you brought up phone books,
oh
but
God.
Even with the height, you know, being to my advantage when you sit, you know, in front of the attorneys or whatever, it was still not high enough. So they had to give me some phone books so that I could look out into the rest of the classroom
yeah,
in court.
Because
so,
the judge is elevated
correct.
Above
everybody
else.
So you
else.
Would think even with the elevation
correct.
It'd
no.
be enough. It still wasn't enough, yeah. Need all the help I could get.
Did they have to get to, like, the child-sized judge robes while you were sitting up
no,
there?
No, no, no. We had the legitimate robes because the good thing is, you know, you don't see it. You're blocked. So it can be like,
were
a,
you, like, tripping?
Be like a blanket. It makes no difference.
Were you tripping all over the robes because they were so long?
Well, they had a special pathway for me to enter the chambers so I didn't have to trip over myself. We had extra security under the circumstances. Don't worry. They took care of me.
Well,
I'm glad you're worried,
though. Well, because I'm sure none of the lawyers or victims, you know, enjoyed you. God, no wonder you have such, like, want to be in charge of everything.
Wait a minute. What is that supposed to mean?
Oh, you know you have an ego. We all have egos.
Well, oh, yes.
But
absolutely.
All of us do. But, you know, you're like, overrolling people left and right. That must have been, like, the best time of your life. You basically get to tell everybody what to do, and whatever you says goes.
The groundwork was laid down very early in life. So now you know the story. So now I don't have to make up excuses anymore. Blame the educational system.
Absolutely.
Don't blame me. They put me in that position.
I got to find that teacher. She created a monster.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you'll even find videotape or people to corroborate my story, but I'm not embellishing that.
No, that doesn't –
I am being honest. The phone books came
– Based on how you act now, I'm not surprised that –
Well, there you go.
That
see,
you were appointed the
I
judge
I provided too
school.
Much insight. I told you I was going to regret it, but this is what I did. I was in a giving mood today.
Let's go to Aaron in Rochester.
Yes, let's get
He's
back
up
on
next.
Topic.
Hi, Aaron.
Exactly.
What's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing?
We're doing great.
Hey, Lance, don't feel bad. I'm short, too, so I have my – time of difficulty. So
it's a very special crew that we all belong to.
By the way, I'm surprised you haven't become a member of the Khalif Raymond fan club yet. He is also of the more diminutive stature.
That's true.
He isn't quite Trendon Holiday.
Well,
now.
That's the problem.
He's not quite. But
see,
no one's going to be Trendon
Holiday.
No, but
I learned my lesson because I jumped on the bandwagon of Trendon Holiday, and then he pulled his hamstring and didn't even make the roster. So now I'm sort of a little bit more reserved. I mean, you know, Ed Egan, I wanted to see him flourish too when he was here, and that didn't last too long. So I try to, you know, take a step back before I give my full support for the diminutive crew.
So in other words, Khalif Raymond for now overruled.
Yes, he is overruled. Using that, yes, correct. Yes, we love the legal jargon if we could work it in. Anyway, continue. Yes, sorry.
No, we good. I feel like we have a real problem next year. Whoever the general manager is and head coach, I feel for them because I think it's a lot of work got to be done because the offense that's being put out, and I granted it's injuries, but I feel like if coaches draft these guys, our second and third round picks and fourth round picks should be able to come in, step in. I mean, granted we got a lot of people coming out of the field that wasn't ever drafted by us as free agents. I get it, but Jesus, I don't know. I don't know what to think no more about this. It's going to be a long rebuild because I can't see us turning around the next year, you know, making it at least to a winning season. You know, I don't see it. And if I don't know what's going to go on with Eli, if they're going to keep him, trade him, I don't know. And the way our division is going is these mobile quarterbacks. And I know everybody's in love with Eli. I like the guy. I don't wish nothing bad for him. But it's like, I'm tired of seeing the same offense on the field every day. If I could call the plays, I know the Dallas Cowboys, the Eagles, the Redskins all look they chops on their players because it's like everybody. If I could call the play from home, and I'm not even in the league, I don't even be on at non practice, and I know what they're gonna do. I know it's not hard for any other team to predict what we're gonna do.
I will tell you one thing that should make you feel a little bit better. I promise you. There will be a different offensive system here with the New York Football Giants next year. It will not be the same offense. So that, I can guarantee you, is going to be different.
Because, I mean, I really would love Eli to finish his career as a Giant. I do. But I feel like if you're going to keep the guy and you're not going to bring those offensive linemen in to protect him because he's not a mobile guy, then why waste his career? Because yeah, he's been an Iron Man for 14 years, but guess what? Not everybody is Superman. Somewhere, one hit to do it all. And I don't trust this offensive line for nothing, okay? And I don't know. I just don't know. That was my call for today. I really wanted to call and say something else, but I don't want to mess the day up.
All right, fair enough.
Thank you guys for taking my call. And Big Blue, you know, and hey guys, enjoy that lobster because I'm gonna be looking, watching it to see who can tear up some lobster.
Thank you, Aaron. Appreciate the call.
All right, Aaron.
And I suppose we appreciate your restraint.
Yes.
I don't know what he wanted to throw out there. No. Yeah.
Well, I mean, clearly, you know, he showcased his frustration in terms of the offense, and we talked about that at the beginning of the show. We've talked about that throughout the season. I mean, in terms of the future decisions, you know, the offensive line, the quarterback, I mean, it depends on the vision of the new general manager, John. And until we know who that individual is, what the vision is, I mean, we could speculate about a variety of different positions. I will say this. Quick turnarounds have happened in the National Football League. While it seems overwhelming and rare, that's why you see some teams miss the playoffs one year and then all of a sudden they're back in the mix. Now, I'm not saying that the Giants are definitely going to be on that track. A lot of it will have to do with the quarterback position, the new offense, to your point, and the talent around the quarterback and what they choose to do on defense. But, you know, the other thing that people need to take into consideration, every team ideally wants to be the Green Bay Packers. And what I mean by that is they want to go from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers without interruption. Right, John? You want to be able to build the bridge and not have any type of uncertainty,
yeah,
under
or
center.
Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck.
That's
or Tony Romo to Dak Prescott. You want to,
yeah.
And frankly, those guys got lucky. I mean, the only reason the Colts
Most
got Andrew Luck is because Peyton Manning got hurt. The Cowboys felt, pardon my French, ass backwards in the Dak Prescott in the fourth round. They tried to draft three other quarterbacks before they got Dak Prescott.
Yes.
So
it was
a lot
process.
Of good fortune is involved in these transitions, too.
Correct. I mean, I'll even bring up the NBA, not to get off topic. The San Antonio Spurs are the perfect example. David Robinson to Tim Duncan to LaMarcus Aldridge without essential interruption.
Or if you want to talk franchise player, I would even say it's Tim Duncan to Kawhi Leonard, if you want to go in that direction.
If you want to,
right.
In terms of franchise,
yeah.
I was looking more the big guy,
of course.
Guess.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that you build around in terms of your
right.
front court. So, you know, that's what every team wants to do. But how do you get there? In order to get there, you also need to evaluate what's behind that franchise quarterback. That's why I keep referring to the term, it's the crossroads. I think that's the most appropriate term. Without being disrespectful to the person currently in that position, but at the same time doing what's good for the well-being of your franchise moving forward.
And Lance, here's the thing. And the reason we don't have any answers for you folks is because we don't know who the next general manager is. We have no inkling of whoever that person could be, what his plan is going to be. And the Giants are in a position here, and I think crossroads is the exact right way to put it. It's not just path A or path B. There's a path C, there's a path D, there's a path E. There are so many different ways the Giants can go with this franchise, from a complete rebuild to a try to win next year, and a million different paths in between. We don't know what direction they're going to go. And we're not going to know until we hear the new general manager stand there at the podium at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center down the hall and tell us what he's thinking. because I don't know what he's thinking. I mean, based on what John Mara said, I wouldn't think this is going to be a tear it down to the, you know, foundation and, you know, be a nuts and bolts type of rebuild from the beginning, because I do think they still believe there is some talent on this roster based on what they did last year. Now, is it 11-win talent? No, maybe not. But could it be 8 or 9-win talent? Yeah, I've seen teams go from 3-13 to 8-8, 9-7. Now, I don't think we've seen many teams go from 3-13 to 13-3.
Well, that may be asking too much, yeah.
That generally doesn't happen, but yeah. So I think you can go a lot of different ways. We got 15 minutes. I got four calls. I want to make sure I get everybody in. Let's go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. Hi, Len.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Hey, Lance, good job on the postgame last night.
Well, thanks for listening.
Especially the last part of it there with Banks and Papa. That was pretty good getting their perspective.
The
on
show
things.
Got much better when Banks and Papa showed up.
See, Len, you had to open up that. You basically laid out a fastball for him, but thank you. I appreciate that. A compliment gets wrapped around the opposite direction. But yes,
you know, by the way, Lawrence is number 90. And,
correct, yes, 97 is Taco Charlton.
Over Bobby
correct.
Hart.
Correct. Yes.
And,
no, that's a good point.
Bobby was trying. That's a tough matchup.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
You know, we're not talking about one of the best right tackles in the league here. So, but Hart was trying. I kept wondering as we
Thanks
got into
ask.
The third quarter why we weren't giving him a little help to try to slow down Lawrence, because it was obvious he was bringing pressure on just about every play. I mean, you know, he's good. The guy's good.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah. John, you might remember on Friday I said Leewood had 20 tackles.
He was too short.
18.
Too short. Yep. He had 18. And he was all over the field. I mean, it was almost like they gave Lee the play on that
end around.
Yep. on that play with Shepard. And that's too deep in your own territory to try that play to start with. I mean, I think it was second and short.
And Len, I think it was second and short when they ran that play too. Wasn't it second and three?
Yeah,
I think, or second and four.
I just from that position, John. Where were they on that? Like the 25 or something?
I'm trying to find the play. Was that in the third or fourth quarter, Len? Do you remember?
I think it was the third quarter.
I can tell you exactly what the situation was. I got it right here.
All right.
That was a. Let's see. I'm looking for the end around.
Here it is. It
Thank
was
you,
with
Lance.
10:38 left in the fourth. It was second and
fourth
four.
Quarter. I was on the wrong page.
So it was
second and four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
And they turned that into a third and 13.
That was probably a major turning point. You know, we were hanging in there, you know, as best we could.
It was still 10-10.
Listen, you made a good point, guys. I thought they did a good job. You know, that zone blocking scheme, it's not terribly sophisticated. I mean, they just tell you it's coming. I mean, that's what they do. And they've got good players on that offensive line in all those positions. I thought we handled that pretty good.
I agree.
That's about as well as anybody is going to handle that. Now, maybe if it's Ezekiel Elliott running it, you know, it's a whole different ballgame. But I thought we did okay with against that scheme.
Well, I think they did well, Len. I'll let you continue, Len. I think they did well against Alfred Morris. Ron Smith, though, had some big runs. I was going to say, to your point, I think they contained Alfred Morris. I think they were very effective within the zone blocking scheme. But Rod Smith had nearly 8 yards per carry, and he didn't have many carries. So their change of pace back was much more effective than their heavy lifter.
Yeah, he was cutting back. Well, that's what they do. They cut back behind that zone. But I was okay with that. I thought we were going to get ripped. But, of course, Harrison makes a heck of a difference. You know, I'm torn between I'll get off after this point, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
You know, torn between what two callers said this morning, you know, the previous caller, you know, looking at a long rebuild, it sure as heck looks like that. Now, I don't know what long is in the NFL, but it doesn't look like it's going to be 1 year. I mean, it looks like it's you're going to be longer. And great point. Matt pointed out, you know, the first caller, he pointed out things are so bad. Yeah, you can't really – I mean, these are – we're playing guys aren't going to be in the NFL next year on any team, not just ours. And – You can't really tell what effect these guys are really having on the whole thing. But I mean, the offense is just it's stuck. I mean, there's not much we can do. I think the audition part. I mean, we can't even audition. I mean, we know we got guys on this team can't play in the NFL. I'm not going to start throwing out names, but, you know, forget the audition. Let's get a general manager in there right now and just start planning for the future. Somebody who knows personnel. I mean, the acquisitions, the drafts, I don't know. You guys may think differently, but I don't think Sherry did that good a job.
No, no, Glenn, look, when you're sitting here and you're 2-11 now, the talent on the rosters are good enough. You procure most of your talent through the draft. And the day after this happened, I quoted John Mara, not from his press conference last week, but from his press conference back in 2016 in January when they let go of Tom Coughlin, and he made the point that the meat of your roster is made up of your, you know, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth round picks.
Yeah.
And over the course of the period of time from 2011 to 2016, there weren't enough of those guys contributing on the roster, and that's what forced them to go out there in free agency and make all those additions from a couple of summers ago. So, yeah, I mean, look, obviously the drafting was not good enough from that in that period of time.
Let me say one more thing. I thought the epicenter of it all, I mean, the really throw your hands up in the air, third, fourth, fifth, sixth round picks were the Flowers year. I mean, no fourth. I know. We traded – well, the third. Start with the third, 00, you know. And the guy from Minnesota is sitting there five picks later, the defensive end from Minnesota, and we went 00. You get to the fourth round, no fourth round. I mean, let's not forget, we had to throw a fourth rounder in there to get Collins.
Yeah.
You get to the fifth round. I mean, this is the epicenter of it all. I mean, I don't get this. Mikhail Thompson? I mean, that's desperate. It's not even desperation. That's a guy. I hate to say this about Jerry, but that's a guy. You know, you got the two-time Super Bowl champion coach. Job on the line with 20 other coaches. Their jobs are on the line. And we go Mikhail Thompson. That draft was terrible. Mikhail Thompson in the fifth, God bless him. I mean, the guy making that pick is a guy acting like, I got a five-year contract. I can do whatever I want. Then you get to the sixth round with Diggs, and Diggs is there. Stephon Diggs is there. Three, four picks later. And then you go to the sixth round, and they pick a wide receiver from that wide receiver factory, the University of Connecticut. I mean, a guy didn't even last the year. I mean, that was a terrible draft with Tom's job on the line. I mean, just I think that's the epicenter of it all.
Thank you, Len.
All right, look, let's get a general manager in here who can, you know, analyze personnel. It's got to be that.
Well, Len, I mean, listen, we're going to let you go. Appreciate the phone call. I mean, I agree with Len's point. You have to be able to strike with those mid-round picks because, to your point, John, you can't go on a spending spree every single offseason to fill the voids on your roster.
And you don't need those guys to be stars.
No, you just need them to be good role players and contributors.
Correct. Sub-package guys.
Listen, carve out a role on a third down as a pass rush specialist, be a special teams contributor, you know, maybe as a wide receiver, you're a guy that comes in on three and four wide receiver sets, you make a catch here or there, you know, the little things like that that may not always show up in the box score, but you know what? It's a reliable option. And also, let's add this, guys that are durable, you know, the guys that he was throwing out, you know, I mean, listen, we could discuss talent all we want, John, but the problem with 00 is he couldn't stay on the field. The problem with Mikhail Thompson is he couldn't stay on the field. Jeremy Davis was also a little bit banged up. So that's what all three of them have in common. Now, when you draft them, are you thinking that they're only going to be on the field for two or three games every season? I don't necessarily think that was the mindset, but that was the true Achilles heel. Forget whether or not they had upside. If they can't get on the field, they can't produce.
And the Giants did have a lot of bad luck with those draft picks,
yeah,
too. I mean, they, you know, the kid at LSU, the safety.
The running back, too, right? Was it the safety?
Yeah, the safety got into the car accident.
Yeah.
You can't do anything about that. Kenny Fultz with
the
injury. Chad Jones, thank you. David Wilson with the neck in the back, obviously.
Yeah.
Though he wasn't necessarily playing that well before he got hurt. But look, I mean, there was some bad luck involved, too. Steve Smith was on his way to a great career until he tore his knee up.
Yep.
Obviously, Akeem Nicks, all those minor injuries really kind of built up with him, too. And that's why he kind of lost his effectiveness down the line. And he mentioned, I'll mention one other specific draft very quickly. I'll go back to 2011. Which, when you look at that draft, Lance, it's one of the best drafts in NFL history, just to go through some of the first-round picks.
You're talking about overall draft?
Yes.
Oh, okay, because I brought up the Giants draft.
No. And around the NFL.
Okay.
Cam Newton. I mean, I'll just give you the top 10 picks in this draft, okay? Top 11. Newton, Von Miller, Marcell Dareus, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, Aldon Smith.
You skipped Patrick Peterson, too.
Oh, I did skip Patrick Peterson, sorry. Jake Locker obviously did not work out. Tyron Smith, Blaine Gabbert, J.J. Watt. Other first-round picks, Mike Pouncey, Robert Quinn, Ryan Kelligan, Nate Solder, Anthony Costanzo, Cameron Jordan, Muhammad Wilkerson, Jimmy Smith, Mark Ingram, Cameron Hayward, and the Giants draft Prince Mukamara. And the funny thing is that he was projected that year
to go higher,
to go in the top 10 or top 12, and he dropped. And the Giants, and everyone's like,
thought,
that's a steal of a pick.
Right,
that's a great pick. Everyone thought the Giants got tremendous value at 19. It didn't work out.
Injury plagued.
And then in the second round of that draft, you know, guys like Kyle Rudolph, Andy Dalton, Raheem Moore, Orlando Franklin, who's a good offensive lineman, Bruce Carter, who's a linebacker for the Cowboys, Shane Vereen. You know, the Giants in the second round of that draft ended up with Marvin Austin.
Which also, from a value standpoint, because he had been suspended, he hadn't played.
And that was injuries, too.
Correct.
That was a risky pick.
Thought it was, all right, maybe good value under the circumstance of what happened. He also couldn't stay durable.
And that was the year Justin Houston went in the third round. DeMarco Murray went in the third round. Randall Cobb went in the second round. So I think that was another draft where they maybe miss some opportunities. They drafted talented players, but for injury reasons and other reasons, they just didn't work out.
Now, to your point, I know we want to get back to the calls. If memory serves me correct, John, at a recent John Mara press conference when they were reevaluating the draft, and it may have been the presser that you referred to, he actually, I believe, made the point, I'm paraphrasing, that they would have had to have reevaluate whether or not they were taking too many risks. Remember, he said something at that point that, mm-hmm. you know, we got to take a step back because we did take those chances that you're referring to.
And reevaluate the way we judge certain players in certain rounds
exactly.
based on things working out. And I think he was probably targeting – look at the Giants' third-round selections over the years. They haven't gone too well.
Yeah.
And a lot of those because of injury issues. Yes, and you're exactly right. He did say that.
So, you know, that I think changed their philosophy moving forward from that point on. But, you know, that's clearly a theme in terms of being in a position where you're coming off a Super Bowl and you're saying to yourself, you know, maybe we could take a risk here or there, and then all of a sudden guys don't pan out because they just can't stay healthy. And that's been a big issue for the Giants over the last recent drafts.
Back to the phones at 201-939-4513, and let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, we're late, so I'm not going to play your open. Lance is happy.
Yeah,
you're not. What's going on?
No
Best
problem.
News ever.
Hey, Lance, there's a new movie coming out called Downsizing. I think this movie
Yeah, oh, I'm very aware. It's with Matt Damon. Trust me, I know. I'm up on my pop culture.
Oh, Charlie.
Oh, I completely understood the reference, yes.
Kudos to you, Charlie.
Kudos to you.
I would have gotten to that at some point the next couple of weeks, but
yeah.
Kudos to you.
But here's the thing.
That's tremendous.
But see, Charlie, I don't have to downsize, okay, because I'm in the perfect position to flourish in their community. So you know,
I know, but you're going to love that movie. You're going to feel like you're
I can relate to
hood,
it. Correct.
Man.
Yes,
that's
me standing next to a big water bottle that looks like I could take a shower in it. Absolutely. That's my entire life. Thank you for adding tremendous insight on that, Charlie. I appreciate it.
And Lance, if you're going to open up the crate of lobsters, I'm definitely not going to put any elastics around them.
Well, we thank you for that. Well, now Charlie's being a giving person. He's looking out for the well-being. Yeah, I know. Yeah, thank you.
Hey,
me versus the lobster. Stay tuned. Final week of December on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Forget, you know, National Geographic. We're going to break all those records in terms of the ratings right here. Yeah. Whether or not my fingers will stay attached. Yeah.
They don't hurt too bad.
Oh, that's good. I thank you for the pep talk. I appreciate it.
About the game.
Yes, let's get to the game. How about that?
I can understand why Eli Apple was mad because he's like, you're putting bums on, you know, playing bums, and I'm sitting here, and you're not playing me. What is this, high school? You're mad at me because I spoke out about something? You know, if he's the guy that spoke out about what was going on, and now they're, you know, it's stupid.
Well, no, Charlie, hold on. He didn't get benched because he, quote-unquote, think they see spoke out about something. He got benched because he decided not to block anybody on a special teams play and let Ed Egan get destroyed because he chose not to block a gunner because it looked like he didn't give a damn. That's why he didn't play.
Well, you're telling me that Flowers has not missed on block?
No, but Eric Flowers tried. Eric Flowers tries to block guys, maybe not successfully, but if you looked at – Charlie, I'm telling you, if you look at this play on all 22, Eli Apple watches the guy run by him. He makes no attempt to block him.
The other thing is, so we don't play him, so we don't. You know, our secondary is horrible. Why don't you put DRC on Dez the whole game? He's our best outside cornerback. Why are we playing some guy we just picked up off the street and having him trying to cover Dez? That was stupid.
You know, it's interesting you brought that up, and I'm going back to what DRC said.
He also doesn't play every snap either.
That's one factor, but, you know, it's funny because DRC, initially when he was making the transition, people were wondering. Now it almost seems like he is specifically a slot guy, and he's taken on that role, Charlie, and that may not be the answer you want to hear, but because DRC's been asked about it when Eli Apple's been in out of the lineup, you know, are you going to now mainly be the outside guy? And this was when Jenkins was healthy, and DRC said, do not assume that, because I am comfortable in my spot out of the slot. So I think part of it may be they just don't want to move him around as much as perhaps they've done in the past, and they'd rather say, you know what, he will be able to shut down the slot guys. And in fairness, Charlie, you could talk about Dez all you want. Cole Beasley, who is their main slot guy, could do just as much damage as Dez Bryant, and you saw that with the 54-yard catch. So you can't just assume, oh, well, if we move DRC out to Dez, so who's now going to defend Cole Beasley?
Well, that's where Cockrell comes in. That's why we brought him in from Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah, but Cockrell's anyway, also a guy that plays on the outside as well, if you go back how they utilized him in Pittsburgh.
I mean, I really thought we were going to win that game. I don't know why, but I really did. And it was close, and all of a sudden, like, bam, it just went south real quick. But, hey,
it's like your phone call, so we could all relate.
I mean, you can't play Eli for that. I mean, they dropped so many passes on him. It was crazy.
Well, you know, I mean, Charlie.
We got to run, Charlie. Thank you, buddy.
We definitely want to go back and forth on his pop culture insight moving forward.
I want to say one thing. I mean, Snacks Harrison tweeted last night that he didn't do enough, and that's why the Giants lost the game. I thought he played a hell of a game. I thought Damon Harrison was great in that game yesterday.
Listen,
so
he's been grinding it out the last few weeks because he's also
injuries,
been battling through multiple things.
Give him credit. And Olivier Vernon, I know he's not giving you the production you need, but he's fighting through a bunch of injuries too. So is Jason Pierre-Paul. Yep. But for Damon Harrison, through these injuries, to be playing at the level he's playing, and he's playing extremely good football right now. Give him credit. He chased down two screen passes from behind yesterday. He's 320 pounds. He's chasing down running backs from behind on screen passes. So he's still hustling his rear end off. Give him credit for that.
Yeah, Snacks is the type of player, speaking of that, John, if you're watching the game on television, you probably don't notice him.
Nope.
It's almost like you have to put together a montage of what he does away from the football to truly see the effort that he's putting in, because he doesn't necessarily show up in the box score.
And Dalvin Tomlinson, too, by the way. He's supposed
to
still play.
All of those
guys,
the defensive tackles specifically. I mean, it's not just the Giants. You could probably make that argument for a number of other DTs across the league.
Coach Marvin is in Delaware, our final caller of the show. Hi, Coach.
How you doing, John?
Doing well. How are you, buddy?
Doing well, Coach Marvin. What do you got for us?
I know I only have a short time. I'm listening to everybody talking, the put down of the team. And we know they got a lot of guys off the street and second, third string guys. And, you know, it is what it is. They're not good enough. That's just the point.
Yep.
And my thing is they're in a rebuild, but I think they can build this team into a playoff team next year. They got enough ammunition that they can stay at the second pick overall or the third pick. They got to stay in that top five.
Speaking of which, I should point out, Marvin, that the Niners winning yesterday certainly helped the Giants get closer to securing that second pick.
And I agree with that. And you got teams like Denver sitting there needing their quarterback. We really don't need one. We can go with Eli and get next year's first round pick. And that first round pick can buy us time to see if Eli's, how long he's going to play, and what Davis Webb can do.
Well, Marvin, remember, though, I don't know what Davis Webb is, and you can always use your next franchise quarterback. So I always hesitate to say you don't need a quarterback. When your starting quarterback's 37 years old, everyone needs their next starting quarterback. Davis Webb could be the guy. I don't know if he is or not. Maybe he is. I hope he is. He's a great kid. He's got all the tools. I think he can be that guy. But, again, if I'm sitting there at two and, you know, a guy's sitting there and your scouting staff is convinced that he's your next Eli Manning, I have a hard time passing him up.
I agree with that. And there's no right or wrong in drafts. I mean, it's win or lose when it comes to drafting.
That's
guys.
True.
I agree with you on that. But if you got Eli can go two or three more years, you got a chance to build a roster. You got a chance to draft down, to trade down. and you have the opportunity to get that line that you want. You have an opportunity to get that back later in the first round or the second round that you want that can be a game changer. Love. He should be there somewhere at the bottom half of that first or the top of the second round.
He should be there for that. I agree with that.
He's a game-changing running back. You won't be able to do that with Barkley because he's going to go in the top five.
I'm not sure if Love's an every down back, though. I'm not sure he has the bulk to be a 20, 25 carry a game guy. I think the kid from LSU has the chance to be that type of guy. Again, we haven't looked at all the tape yet. But, yeah, look, I don't think you have to pick a running back early to get a good one. What's your final point, Marvin? Then we got to go.
My final thought is that the fans got to just give them their chance and let them go ahead and rebuild the team that they have. And they got some pieces that they can build around. And we'll be right back in the hunt of things. Remember, the beginning of the season, everybody was on them. No matter who you were talking to, the Giants were among those top 5-6 teams in the NFL in the beginning of the season.
Thank you, Marvin. Appreciate the call, buddy.
They were, and that had a lot to do with the makeup of the roster, so I would agree. I mean, there's certain pieces, and we talked about this on previous shows, John. There's too many financial implications to say that you get rid of everybody. That's virtually impossible. That's not going to happen. But, I mean, there certainly is going to be turnover on the roster because that happens every single season for every single team. To the point about the draft, you know, what the last caller was talking about is this is what you have to answer. If everybody's on board with a quarterback, which is what you were mentioning, then it's going to be very hard to say we should trade down and stockpile picks because everybody's on the same page. If there is not unison in that regard, my argument would be, to the last caller's point, well, if we can then address multiple positions on our roster, multiple voids, then I think there's more logic behind moving down.
Yeah, I will never say you have to draft somebody at a position because that's how you get into trouble. That's how you pick Jake Locker. That's how you pick Blaine Gabbert. That's how you pick Christian Ponder in the top 15 picks, like they did in that 2011 draft I was referencing before. It was a great draft, but you still think about it. Somebody decided that they were going to pick Jake Locker instead of J.J. Watt. Just go back in time about what these players became. And at one point, someone whose main job in the NFL was to evaluate talent said, you know what? I could draft J.J. Watt here. I could draft Tyron Smith here. You know what I'm going to take? I'm going to take that Jake Locker. You can get, especially at the quarterback position, get into a lot of trouble saying, I have to pick a quarterback and get my franchise guy. Because just because the guy might be the best quarterback in that particular draft class doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be a great quarterback.
Yeah, but you know what happens in a lot of those situations you mentioned, John? The team is in such need of a quarterback, they convince themselves.
It's a mind trick.
This is the guy. We've got to take him. And then you're not thinking things straight because you're overlooking other positions. And how coincidental it is that J.J. Watt then winds up then going into that very same division. I think if you asked Tennessee, they probably would have said, well, if we passed on J.J. Watt, hopefully he went to another division and then he winds up going to the Houston Texans. Comes back to bite you when you think that way.
So look, excuse me. If the Browns pick a quarterback at one, and they don't have a general – well, they do have a general manager now, but we don't know what John Dorsey's thinking. If they pick a quarterback at one and only one of Rosen and Darnold come out in the draft, I've seen enough of Baker Mayfield to know I think he's going to be a successful NFL quarterback.
But I agree with you.
His physical traits make you worry about picking him at second overall.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't many successful quarterbacks at 6 foot in the NFL.
Drew Brees.
There are some.
Guy, yeah.
Drew Brees and
but
Russell
not
Wilson
them,
being
yeah.
the two primary guys.
Yeah.
But it's more difficult to play the position. And again, we haven't done our research on
these
guys yet, so we're talking
falls,
in generalities.
Listen, I'm high on Baker Mayfield. If he falls, you know, that's more of a reason why maybe you don't have to then reach for a quarterback because you can get it later on.
Correct.
Or like a Kirk Cousins or a Dak Prescott.
Or maybe you really like Lamar Jackson out of Louisville.
There's another one. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you like the kid out of Wyoming a lot. Maybe you think, you know, Josh Allen's going to be a great player.
And there's good value in some of those guys.
I don't
guys.
Know.
It depends.
I don't know how the Giants are going to evaluate these players. But you're right. You don't have to pick a quarterback at two. But if you're sold on a guy that's there, don't try to get fancy. Because that can bite you in the butt, too.
And that's been well documented.
Yeah.
Just wanted to throw this out, unrelated to the Giants, because you brought up the Cleveland Browns. Now that Dorsey is the general manager, just want to throw this out here. Perhaps do you think he would go after Alex Smith if the Chiefs are ready to move on to Patrick Mahomes, given the fact that Dorsey was there when they brought in Alex Smith? and instead of using it on a young quarterback, does he say, let's bring in an established veteran and I'll build around him?
I will say this. I don't think the Browns will trade down because they already have selections. I think
they
have
stockpiled enough, yeah.
What, six picks in the first 45 or 50 it's selections or something crazy
what
like that.
Yeah.
There's some type of crazy number where they have like so many like 8 picks in the top 100 maybe it is something like that where they don't need more picks. They have enough picks, okay? So now might they trade down a couple slots to a team that wants to move up? Sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to do this deal where they move down to like 15 or 16. They're going to want to get a premium player in this draft. Okay?
Or maybe they use the pick, but then at the same time try to acquire Alex Smith with some other picks that they've
acquired
over the last few years.
I think that's possible. And
yeah.
Look, I think that's possible. I think that actually makes a little bit of sense. You know, they could always trade for Alex Smith and then keep that pick too. I don't know. I don't think that the Chiefs would. If I'm the Browns, I wouldn't trade the first overall pick in the draft for Alex Smith.
No, I wouldn't.
I mean, wouldn't do that.
No, especially if you get a young guy that he can mentor.
Right. I wouldn't do that. I think the Browns are interesting, though, given that they have a new GM. I think, look, let's be honest. Why'd the Browns hire John Dorsey? They think he gives them the best chance of finding their quarterback. The Browns have been looking for a quarterback since Bernie frickin' Kosar, okay? Literally, they've been looking for a quarterback since Bernie Kosar. They want John Dorsey to find the quarterback. Now, does that mean he's definitely picking one at number one? No, but I'd be really surprised if they didn't. Let me put it that way.
Well, I would too, but that's why I'm thinking that, you know, maybe he's of the mindset that I don't necessarily have to find the guy in the draft. I could find the guy via trade or something like that because other teams have gone that route too.
I mean, in the current draft order, you take a look at these other teams that are close to one. There's not a ton of quarterback need there. There's some like the Broncos. You could see maybe making a move for a quarterback if they soured on Paxton Lynch already and Trevor Siemian. The Jets, though they might end up picking, you know, around 10 or 11 this year. Who knows? That's a big move to move up to get a quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a ton of teams at the bottom that, you know, the Niners don't need a quarterback anymore. Jimmy Garoppolo can play. I'm not telling you he's a all-pro.
No, but they feel good that as long as they can work out a contract, of course, that – he will be the guy for the future.
So who are these teams that are going to trade an arm and a leg to move up to pick a quarterback? I'm not sure how there are that many out there that are going to do it that are in such desperate need. So, and we should mention Carson Wentz, too. That was big news that came out today. We haven't mentioned that, and we should. I know it's the Eagles. I know Giant fans, you hate the Eagles, but
that's awful news no matter what team it is.
You're making a run for the top seed. You have two losses. You have a young quarterback in his second year that's in the race for the MVP.
Having a great season.
I mean, it's hard to argue they're not one of the one or two best teams in the conference this year with a real chance to go to the Super Bowl. And this poor kid in week 14 tears his, you know, anterior cruciate ligament, his ACL. That stinks.
You went for the harder term. I'm impressed. Yes. Yeah.
It sucks.
It does.
It sucks.
Well, you know, listen, a lot of people are going to say
it
is. Of course it's bad because, you know, what's been brewing in the NFC this year is really unheard of. Where I keep saying, I mean, you may need 11 wins to get a wild card. And every year we're talking 9-7 may do it.
I think there's a 10-win team that doesn't make it this year.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think we're heading in that direction.
I
so, you know, it made for a very exciting group of teams that could be matching up with one another atop the NFC standings. And, you know, now they'll likely turn to Nick Foles, who coincidentally was their quarterback the last time they made the postseason.
And he'll do
in 2013.
Okay.
I think
he's a solid backup.
He's got – the good news for him is he's got an overwhelming amount of talent around them.
Yeah,
so,
does.
You know, and that's what Philadelphia has to say to itself. Listen, it stinks that they lost Carson Wentz, but we brought in wide receivers. We've got tight ends. We've got dynamic running backs. And – Jim Schwartz has done a really good job with that defense where they're much more of a balanced team than they had been in previous years. So, you know, people are going to count out Philadelphia. They lose their quarterback. I would not be so quick to count them out because I think all of these NFC teams near the top have their fair share of questions.
I agree. I think it'll be tough when they play a team like the Vikings and their defense for a guy like Nick Foles to have a lot of success the Vikings defense, I mean, they've shut down awesome offenses this year. But I do think one thing that's been underrated, Lance, about the Philadelphia Eagles this year that people don't realize, and I think it's one of the reasons that Carson Wentz has had the success that he's had, not that he's not going to be a great player and isn't a great player, but you need the pieces around you. You haven't looked at this.
Okay.
Where do you think the Eagles rank in terms of rushing yards per game in the National Football League?
Oh, I thought you were going to go with turnover differential, one of our other favorite topics.
Where do you think they rank rushing yards per game?
Rushing yards per game?
Where do you think they rank?
I'd say Philadelphia is probably in the top seven.
They are second in the National Football League at 143 rushing yards per game, 4.6 yards per carry. And here's the thing. People get into the fantasy football. The yards are so spread out among four different running backs
that
people don't realize how good that team is at running the ball. So I think they're going to go even more in that direction now, use a lot of play action with Foles. They have a good offensive line. Run the football, use all their backs that they can use now, and I think they're going to become a different type of trying to win uglier football games. They're not going to try to win these high-scoring games anymore. They're going to try to win 20-13. Let that defense get after the quarterback a little bit. Control the football. Run it more. Don't let Nick Foles get into situations where he's got to throw third and long and throw interceptions, and that's how they're going to try to win football
but
games.
But he'll flourish if he's constantly looking at third and threes and third and fives. That's going to open up the pass game. I mean, look, Corey Clement is a running back that nobody talks about much, but he's also flourished in addition to LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi. So you're right. It's not a one-headed monster. It's more like a four- or five-headed monster. Darren Sproles also was effective earlier this season. He's on IR. They've really done a nice job. I think it speaks a lot
Barner's
about the offensive line.
Kenyon Barner,
Barner is another one that has been in the mix. Yeah, the offensive line has held up despite some of the injuries that they've dealt with. Plus, you know, you lose your left tackle for the season, Jason Peters, too. And I still think that could very well come back to bite them when they get to the playoffs. But right now, it has not been too much of an issue. They've still been able to run the ball.
They're
going to
run the football, and they're going to rely on that running game and that defense.
They should do that.
They can still be – I'm not sure if they can get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, but I think they can still be fairly successful, win a round in the playoffs, get to the NFC Championship game. And then a one-game situation, who knows what's going to happen. Maybe you play the Vikings and Case Keenum has a game like he did against the Giants last year when he throws four interceptions. You don't know what's going to happen.
Vikings offense has been a little up and down. They've had games where they're explosive, and then they have games where they have to win ugly, too. Carolina is in the same boat. And, you know, first of all, if I'm going to play the Saints, I want them to come to Philadelphia. I do not want to go to New Orleans. So another reason.
I mean, look, the Saints are better equipped to win a road game in the cold now with that running game they have.
But still.
I agree. I'm with you.
Still want them to come to you.
All right. Wow, we went way late today, but I thought it was good talk.
Absolutely.
So that's okay. Thanks for joining us. We're going to get some lunch tomorrow. It'll be Salzburg and Deal on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Lance Mendel, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com, everybody. Have a fantastic day.
Have a good one.